Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to welcome to the Salieri Report someone I've wanted to have for a long, long time. Her name is Rosa Khoury. She's the director of the Post Sustainability Institute and author of Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21. She's a forensic commercial real estate appraiser, and she specializes in eminent domain valuation. She's a former district branch chief for the California Department of Transportation. And she's been working with land use and litigation and activism around land use for several decades, three decades now, and has really documented and exposed the relationship between Agenda 21 and what's happening to our private property rights and to our individual liberties. And Rosa, I want to thank you for taking time out of what I know is both a busy work and activist schedule to join us on the Salieri Report, and I'm really glad you do, because I know how important this issue is.
Yeah, it sure is, and thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's just launch in. What is Agenda 21, and why should we care?
Okay, well, Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century. It's called that because the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, the United Nations Earth Summit, is where 178 nations plus the Vatican agreed to implement Agenda 21 standards across the world. And really, essentially what it is, it's not a treaty, it's soft law. So although George H.W. Bush agreed to it, it was agreed to essentially by consensus by those governmental entities, and then it was brought back to, specifically, we'll talk about the United States, to the U.S., where President Clinton implemented it through the President's Council on Sustainable Development in 1993 through 1999. And at that point, it came into the country, although it was a non-binding agreement, because our laws and our rules were changed to conform to it, it essentially is binding. So what it is it's the agenda for the 21st century. It's a worldwide blueprint. It is the action plan, and that's what it's called in the document. It's the action plan. And really what it is an action plan to inventory and control all land, water, minerals, plants, animals, construction, means of production, energy, education, law enforcement, information, and all human beings in the world. It's an inventory and control plan, and this is the means by which full globalization happens. And globalization is essentially the centralization and creation of a single world governance. So this is how control actually happens. And the plan is designed to, it looks like a local plan. It's a global plan, but it's implemented locally. And the reason why you should care about this, of course, is because it impacts every element, every aspect of your life, from how you live, where you live, what you're going to do with your time, what you eat, how you get from one place to the other, whether you're able to use your land or not, and what your children are learning, what you're learning, what social media is doing to you. In other words, this is a fully comprehensive plan. It affects every aspect of your life. It's a full surveillance plan, and it involves all systems. The way that it's imposed on us is essentially to create total social upheaval, financial, social upheaval, and confusion and uncertainty. And, of course, you see that now with upending, you know, existing systems and destroying, you know, destroying the old systems. The way that it's implemented then is by creating a new value system based on tracking, assessing, and rating human beings. And they use the climate action model that they've been using for years, which is a continuous loop of assessment. But the thing that's necessary to know is that it's a social engineering plan. So it's affecting every aspect of your life. And when you see these refugees pouring from, you know, one place to the other, the idea is to destroy existing cultural concepts of what it means to be a nation, because the plan is about destroying the nation state. That's what the New World Order is, destroying the nation state, creating the new boundaryless new world order that essentially is neo-feudalism. That's the rise of the city state. So it's empowering cities, which are huge mega cities. These are called mega regions. And this is not, it's really important for people to know I'm not, you know, I'm accustomed to testifying in court. When, before I retired, I was an expert witness in land use. This is not, you know, some fantasy thing that's out in the future. This is really happening now.
And oh, I can assure everyone. Yeah, no, I can assure everyone this is not, you know, in term, what I think part of this is an effort to significantly lower the resource use per person of people in the G7. So if you're, my nickname for the committee that runs the world is Mr. Global. So if you're Mr. Global and you say, well, we're going to develop the emerging markets, and that means everybody globally is going to start using more stuff. What we need to do to balance that is we need to radically reduce how much stuff everybody in the G7 is. And theoretically, we could use markets to do that, but that would mean the world was out of control. So we'd rather have sort of a control system, you know, an unbelievable surveillance and control system. And the reality is if we sweep everybody up into mega cities, then it's much easier to kind of watch them and reduce their resource use per person. That's the way, you know, I would say it.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, so you create artificial scarcity and you restrict use. Of course, the plan is it's a plan to get people out of the rural and suburban areas and bring them into the city centers where they can be managed, surveilled, and controlled. And so this is smart growth. That's, you know, that's what you see in your cities, and you see, you know, basically restrictions on being able to get out of the cities eventually. And this is because it's a social engineering plan. You have the schools, you know, Common Core. This is all about breaking down traditional methods of learning so that people are re-socialized to think that this new world of the new man is, you know, is so desirable. They, you know, they essentially make you ask for it.
Well, I also believe that the way they're reengineering education and healthcare means that, you know, they're putting both of them in a process where you can use technology to do everything, and that gives you much deeper control. I mean, you can literally control children and surveil them 24/7 without the intercession or supervision of a teacher or principal is where this is going. But it gives you the ability to manage the entire local economy with large corporations and a lot of technology.
Right. And technology, you know, see, the globalization really is the standardization of all systems and inventory, monitoring, and assessment. That's essential to it. So it's made possible with computers. Of course, the Nazis would have loved to do something like this. IBM made it partially possible for them. But, you know, now they're going all the way, you know.
And, well, I don't know if you know, IBM was the contractor for the government on the latest census, and they were also making software for the smart meters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, IBM is right in the swing of it again, right?
Yes, they are. Right. I know it never ended. Yeah. It never ended, Watson. You know, this is, you know, this is the biometric system. You know, is you're not going to be able to travel without it pretty soon, and so of course all your identification and all that. I mean, you're not. And this is one reason why land use really comes in here, because if you're out there in your land, it's really hard to monitor you physically because you're a distance from the center. If you're in the center, in your high-rise building, built over shops, your smart growth building that's been subsidized with your property tax dollars, if you're in that thing, you're going to be a lot easier to monitor and control and surveil. And
Rosa, I hate to interrupt, but I also think have you ever seen that wonderful interview of Sir James Goldsmith in 1994 trying to stop the World Trade Organization?
No.
Because I think part of this is when that started, that was 94, so 92 was when this hoopla started. You know, you had 3 billion plus small farmers globally. And what you're seeing is part of this is the industrialization and command and control of agriculture so that you get a population who's totally dependent on you for their food. And that is the basis of a new global currency and total control.
Yes, and the plan is all about dependence, total dependence
right.
on government
right.
and, of course, public-private partnerships. And, you know, a funny thing, of course, I know you know this, in 1992, the other major thing that happened in 1992 was the Maastricht, or however you say that, the Maastricht Agreement, which is, you know, what's
right, it's European Union. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so this, of course, these things, you know, obviously that started with a coal and was its coal and steel agreement in the 50s, but, you know, this is another trade agreement, and this is the plan. It's, you know, how these things come about is by, you know, creating, if this is a corporate plan, which it is, it's a mega corporate plan. What do mega corporations want? They want no borders because they don't want to have to, you know, mess around with regulation and law. They want, you know, standardized laws worldwide. They want capacity building for developing new markets in poorer countries. And they, you know, they want a cheap, obedient, mobile labor force that's going to adapt to them. So then they want to influence the entire educational system to be able to create that, you know, sort of good worker, basically obedient worker, mindless worker. And that's what we're seeing now. That's exactly the purpose of having a computer in the hands of every child. You know, it's not about, you know, getting a whole lot of information. It's also about dumbing them down to the point where they're only reacting physically to the games that they're playing in a way that is completely
right.
mindless, so that they will respond when prompted. And that's what this is, you know, one of the many ways of controlling people.
Let's walk down from the national bureaucracy, because Clinton created this government-wide initiative, and then a process started where in the administrative rules, in the regulations, and over time the laws, and then by executive order, you start to integrate all this stuff in the day-to-day process within each of the 21 so-called covered agencies. So I'm familiar with HUD, and HUD, of course, has, you know, community block development grants and housing money going into every community, and then it's requiring every community to do plans and do all sorts of stuff. So it's a wonderland of implementing all sorts of stuff inside communities.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming some of the other agencies are as well, because the federal government is pumping out tons of grants and money to all these agencies. And as one of my allies, Franklin Sanders, says, all government money comes with a sock in the jaw. And the sock in the jaw increasingly is to implement Agenda 21 within all these different programs and plans. Does that fit with your,
Yeah, that's really where it's at. And, you know, most people go along willingly. Most of the elected officials love it and go along willingly because they love the money and they're willing to do it. There's a particularly interesting fight that went on in Westchester County in New York between the county administrator and HUD that's, you know, I have it on my website. It's interesting where they were fighting. The county administrator was fighting Agenda 21, didn't even know it. I want to mention, too, of course, it's never called Agenda 21.
Right.
When you look for it, you're not going to see it.
It's called Smart Growth and Green and
right.
Wonderful.
Right, so you're going to see it. And I will, you know, I'd love to tell people some of the ways to find it. And because it's in your town, you're not, you know, it's there. It's not that you got out of it. So HUD, of course, you know, is one of the major federal government agencies that was on the President's Council on Sustainable Development in 1993. It was 10 federal agencies, including education, transportation, the EPA, Interior, Defense, State, HUD, et cetera. And so HUD, of course, is a big funder for the Partnership for Sustainable Communities, which they do in conjunction with the Department of Transportation. It's HUD, Department of Transportation, and I'm spacing out on the other third one, but it might be EPA. But anyway, HUD is a big funder, and of course they're a funder of the Strong Cities, Strong Communities Initiative, which is their latest incarnation. They give over $100 million a year in grants just for that Partnership for Sustainable Communities. And what they're doing is they're influencing what gets built in the center of your town. And it's really that basic. They're really actually giving money not for the actual construction. That's coming out of your tax dollars. But what they're giving money for is so that your government gets these so-called grants that are about creating these plans that are regional. Now, this is real important to check this out because we're talking about one world government here and or governance. And here's a clue. Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was National Security Advisor for Carter, among other things, he said, and a big booster for this, he said, we can't leap into world government in one quick step. We've got a precondition for eventual globalization, and that is progressive regionalization, because in that way we're going to get to larger and more stable cooperative units, okay? And he said that in 95. So basically what that means is that the way to go from, you know, your representative government with your city, county, state, and fed, it's a way to go from that to completely unaccountable governance, which is regional, which you do not elect and have no control over, no input into. The way you do that is by giving these federal grants that have your city and county change your zoning and your general plan to actually regulate what is going to be built in the center of your town, completely different from what's been there before, and making it so that very few property owners are going to be able to actually get the funds together to build that huge building with multi-story residential on top of shops. That's the whole smart growth image. The reason they want that is because they want a place where everybody can move into. They want you out of the suburbs and off and out of your house, because what are you doing in your house? It's hard to find out what you're doing in your house, okay? It's not that hard to find out what you're doing when you don't have a backyard and you have no place to go that's private. That's why, you know, and also you can build into those high-density developments in the center of your town. You can build high-tech stuff into them so that they can be surveilled more easily. So one of the things that happened is that after Clinton got those 10 federal agencies, plus he got, who was on the President's Council on Sustainable Development, he got the 10 federal agencies, plus he got non-governmental organizations, nonprofits that were mainly environmental. And then there was a weird one on there, Ciba Geigy, which is the, they make Ritalin and a bunch of vaccines. They were on there too. What they wanted to do was create a new form of governance that actually is fueled by funding from mega corporations and foundations like the Ford, Rockefeller, and Carnegie foundations that would actually fund government and influence government and then have this go in a circle so that government makes laws and rules that benefit these huge corporations, and then the corporations can hide behind government and use also police power to make what they want happen.
I'll tell you something interesting. The part of my, you know, I'm a financial person, and one of the things I've spent a great deal of time on in the last 20 years is sort of documenting what I estimate is now $40 trillion being stolen out of both communities and the federal and state governments. And one of the ways I describe that $40 trillion is, you know, that's enough to fund an endowment to run a world government with privately. Mm-hmm. So it'd be, you know, there's no way to do this, but if you could sort of, you know, connect the dots between the different foundations that whose growing money funding this, how much of this was really stolen illegally out of the federal government?
Really, remember when Rumsfeld was talking about, gee, where did that money go? Gee, I wonder what happened to the $1 trillion. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the whole design of the thing is don't, you know, wash my other hand while I steal as much as
right.
I
right, so I think this, these guys, you know, I don't think this is foundation money. I think this is stolen money.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But then they, you know, they cycle it back, right? I mean, they're not taking anything out of their pocket. This is our money that they're buying us with, you know, basically.
Right.
And, you know, that they're controlling us with. And this is, and they, you know, they use everything accessible to them, including land trusts, you know, basically just buy you know, take conservation easements, suck the land out of the hands of the people into, you know, like some guy like Ted Turner, who's got like 11 million acres or something. But, you know, that, I mean, I'm not talking about him necessarily, but what I'm talking about is that the power is going out of the individual, going out of the small business, and also, of course, the pump and dump of our economy and, you know, how everyone, you know, basically people were given money that couldn't afford to have it, you know, that were basically.
Right. It's basically a war on small business. You're trying to aggregate.
Yes, it's a war on the rural people. It's a war on small business. It's essentially, if you're in a rural area, you've got a target on you. And if you're a small business person, you know, this is the thing, is that these mega corporations, I mean, if you're selling Chiclets on the street, they're after you. It's killing all competition. It's really, and, you know, what did George Bush say? It's the, you know, consolidation of money into higher, tighter, and righter hands. You
right.
know? And that if people knew about it, they'd chase them down the street and lynch them, which is amazing. Of course, told people that, and that there's the arrogance. They knew. He knew, of course, he's not going to get chased down the street and lynched. Why not? I don't know.
Well, one of the things you do a great job in your book of is pointing out that through our property taxes and our own tax dollars, we're financing this.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than the money that we're paying in taxes going to provide the services that we need, you know, increasingly it's going to finance these things which are harming us. So
right.
part of our financial problem and our time problem is we're paying money to somebody who's stealing our time and stealing our assets.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that's through something called tax increment financing, also known as redevelopment, also known at one point as urban renewal, and, you know, under a myriad of names. But this is, you know, basically what it is that you, it's kind of slightly complicated. It isn't really, though. Basically, your area gets declared blighted because your government, you know, paid some fly-by-night consultant company to say that, you know, hundreds of acres of your town are so grossly undeveloped and poorly maintained that, you know, nobody would invest there. So therefore, they need to take property taxes from that area and give them to developers who are going to, and the land, a bunch of the land, to some developers who are going to get these huge windfalls from your property taxes and, you know, basically build smart growth, which is what I just talked about is the desired model. And what happens
right.
there is that, you know, you're basically, well, you know, they're not going to sit there and wait for 30 years of property taxes to collect. They're going to get a bond. They're going to get the money up front. And that means that you now have a loan, basically, that a portion of your property taxes every year is going to go to pay off this huge bond debt. It's enormous bond debt across the United States. That's one reason why your streetlights are off, your parks are shaggy. And, of course, they'll tell you that you've got a drought and you can't water your park. But another reason is because there's no money for your local services because it's all going for bond debt to pay for those huge buildings in the center of your town, often which are empty. The ground floor on that retail very often is empty. And very often the thing is partially empty or it's, you know, Airbnb stuff because this thing is designed to bankrupt you. The plan is designed to bankrupt you, to bankrupt your city, to create these, you know, high-speed rail is designed to fail. All that is a, you know, a building block of mega regions. The idea is to get you out of those towns, those small towns, into the center of big cities where you can be managed, controlled.
So I just have to tell you one story. In 1996, my company was working as a lead financial advisor to the Federal Housing Administration at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And what we were discovering was what I discovered in the Bush administrations when I worked at HUD, which was we had neighborhoods with defaulted foreclosed properties that were in the foreclosure property at HUD, single family homes that could be, you know, there were tons of neighborhoods where you could purchase them for $50,000 and rehab for a reasonable amount of money while HUD was paying $250,000 per unit to get brand new constructed public housing in the Hope 6 program. And so I went to the assistant of the person who ran Hope 6 and I said, look, we could get, you know, we could get 3, 4, 5 homes for the price of one. Let's just shift the money out and buy and rehab all these defaulted properties. And, you know, you could create 4 to 5 homes for the price of one. And she turned bright red and looked at me and she said, but how would we generate fees for our friends?
Mm-hmm. Wow, I can't believe she actually said that. And that's right.
I know. You have to love an honest woman.
I mean, that's exactly right. And the friends, yeah. Of course, Enterprise Community Development and LISC and these huge developers that get tremendous amounts of, you know, of HUD money and other agency money to, you know.
Oh, can I tell you?
Go ahead.
Okay, I got to tell you one more LISC Enterprise story because I had quite a go-round with Enterprise and LISC when I was at HUD. And Jim Rouse used to be a dear friend of mine, and he was terrific, you know, so it never, whatever it turned into was not what his intention was anyway. But I was working on a plan to let community, you know, when I discovered the internet, I said, you know, all these communities can finance privately. We don't, you know, we can get the learning metabolism up so high. In a community, we don't need, you know, we just take all the money we're spending on the lottery and beer and can redevelop the neighborhood ourselves. And so I was doing private equity and publicly traded equity plans for neighborhoods, you know, place-based equity, REITs for your neighborhood, venture funds for your neighborhood. And I had so it started quite a squabble because obviously they'd given Agenda 21, it was the opposite. You know, it was the unconcentration and uncontrol of cash flow as opposed to the concentration and control. So I slammed head on into centralization anyway. So the general counsel for the authorizing committee in the House that oversaw all these plans took me out to lunch. He took pity on me and he said, look, he said, here's how it's going to work. No equity will be allowed to flow into any of these neighborhoods. The only equity that will be allowed to come into these neighborhoods and do anything is the corporate tax credit programs run by LISC and Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what he was saying is the goal of LISC and Enterprise is, in fact, to control and stop equity markets in these neighborhoods, yeah. Not to help them. Right.
No.
And
yeah.
I just have to, while I'm on it, I just have to tell you one other story. I took my vision. We did a video. I was working with a Hollywood production company of how we could start computer learning centers and develop privately and grow all these neighborhoods. And I took it up to the, there was an American Assembly up at the Harriman Estate up in New York. And they brought in all the largest foundations in community development, all the top guys. And we turned off the lights and we showed them this whole video and vision and we turned the lights back on and Rosa, I've never seen so many depressed faces. They all look, because what I was saying is we don't need your money. We don't need you. We're just going to do it privately. No problem. But we can end poverty. You know, there's no, we can end, because it's all a matter of learning metabolism. We can end poverty. So next day, Barry Zegas, who was a good guy who I liked very much, who was the head of the foundation at Fannie Mae, comes down to breakfast and he looks like he's going to die. And I said, Barry, what's the matter? I thought you would love my presentation. We can end poverty and make money. You know, we can get rich ending poverty. And he looked at me and he said, you've just told me that my life's work is useless. And I said, Barry, what you're saying is for your life to have meaning, we have to grow poverty. That's nuts.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But everybody saw, you know, everybody got energy from more and more dependency, more and more dependency, more and more dependency. And so what had happened around these plans and all of this, you know, the HUD plans come in and guys in neighborhoods used to say, oh, wait a minute, I can't promote my neighborhood and talk about all the great strengths. They want me to document that my neighborhood is terrible. It's your blight story.
Right.
And you know, but basically they were financially and culturally vested in growing dependency. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable to me.
Right. Yeah. Well, this, okay, so Agenda 21 gives you, I mean, not that you wouldn't have this, but it gives you a framework for that because it,
right.
This is essential. And that's one thing, you know, people who are talking about Agenda 2030 now, like it's, you know, the latest thing and it's just kicking Agenda 21 to the curb. Let me remind you that Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century. That's
century.
10 years. We are in 2015. 2030 is 15 more years. The plan is really essentially designed to be, you know, drop dead date 2050. So, and I'm talking about Agenda 21. So Agenda 2030, and I'll tell you, okay, I called my book Behind the Green Mask. Because the green mask is the environmental, we care about the environment, we're so cool, but, you know, we're going to do anything to stop global warming stuff.
Right.
But really, just like your story about how, hey, shit, we don't want to end poverty. What's that going to do to us? That's good, you know, we don't want to do that. Okay, so here's this thing with Agenda 2030, this deal. You know, okay, well, they're kind of wearing out the environment thing, so now they want to move on to ending poverty. So now that's the face of it. We're going to, you know, end world poverty. You're going to be the new world citizen. You are so cool, you 20-something millennial. You're going to be, like, so groovy. You're you know, click on Facebook if you vote for X, Y, or Z. And the thing is that they're not ending poverty. What they're doing, you know, social equity, there's the three elements of Agenda 21 is environment, economy, and social equity, the three E's. And the third E is social equity, and what that is really about is not ending poverty. What it's about is bringing the third world up to a point where you can open those markets, your mega corporations, where you can open those markets
right.
to buy your goods, and you bring down the developed nations, as you were saying, you know, so that your wages are lower, and another, you know, what's going to lower the need for money there is to get you out of your single family home, get you out of your car, get you into, you know, some kind of a job that is basically just either an actual job or earning money by working for a nonprofit that's just doing absolutely nothing except monitoring, controlling everything. And
they're going to make sure you don't have the ability to grow and own equity.
Yes.
That's, you know,
absolutely right. And
right.
wasn't that what the pump and dump did? I mean, anyone who had two nickels went and got a house and then lost everything. And for 7 years or so, you're completely destroyed your credit. And probably you ruined your life and your partner's gone and your whole thing has collapsed. And you're living in, you know, in a high rise, transit oriented development, government funded project next to the railroad tracks. And that's, of course, where a lot of our money went to, was to transportation projects that aren't really about transportation. They're really about these high-density, multi-story housing buildings that are built at your high, you know, at your train or
right.
BART or, you know, at the stations. They used that land instead of for developing, you know, transportation. They used it for building housing. And you're going to see that
right.
everywhere. And you paid for it. You paid for it.
I'm always getting into squabbles with people who keep thinking, oh, you know, not-for-profits are good. I said, no,
yeah.
people need to own and build family wealth. We need
right.
family, you know, independent families with enough provision to get themselves through the cycles. And they need the means of creating wealth in the general economy through their businesses and their inventions and all their other things. We need a equity rich economy. One thing that I think they're very good at is they're very good at giving conceptual explanations of what all this stuff is and branding it with words that makes it sound like it's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
right.
there's no doubt there's terrible inequity between the developing worlds and the developed world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but the reality is you don't need to destroy and debase the culture and economy in the developed world to address that imbalance. So,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know,
yeah. It's not about addressing the imbalance at all. It's really about destroying the economy and, you know, the equity and everything. You know, I mean,
well,
really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the face of it. The face is the lie. That's the cancer.
Right. I think a lot of it is they want to get from here to there. And in fact, there are, you know, there are market-oriented ways of getting from here to there. The problem is that market-oriented ways require transparency, and they don't want transparency for a variety of reasons, but they also require a certain amount of competition. And so they would get you from here to there, but then the specific groups that they want to maintain in control wouldn't be in control.
Right.
So you're
And I would even go further, you know, unfortunately, and say they don't want to get from here to there. They don't care about from here to there. That's their TV image. That's their, you know, that's the face of the thing. They really would prefer to have you, you know, in poverty and basically dead, you know, in their, you know, their high density development where you can be, you know, packed tighter and tighter and tighter into these mega regions.
Right.
And, you know, and not, and basically though, be happy. See, this is the other part of it that's really important.
That requires massive amounts of drugs, right?
Yes,
I would point out, I didn't know if you saw it, the New York Times came out with a new headline, death rates rising for middle-aged white Americans.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and in fact, a couple, 2 years ago, I published a study. If you look at the, since 1990, a white woman my age who doesn't have a high school degree, the average age, life expectancy has dropped 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, so, and that's connected.
Darn it.
In other words,
if it was more. Yeah, that's it. Hey, it's like off yourselves. Let's get you out of here. Let's get the robotic millennials in here. Excuse me if you're listening and you happen to be 20 years old. You're obviously not one of them.
I love the millennials. I have great experience with the millennials. I really do.
You know, that's good. But my experience has been that, you know, and I've connected with people who secretly contact me and say, hey, you know, I'm getting invited to this UN event and I want to know what it's all about. And, you know, they ask me, what should I do? Or can you come and meet with me or whatever? And what I'm finding is that people who have a bit of money, people who are, you know, grateful enough to not be in a poverty situation are really scared. And they want to hang on to that. And they're not going to make any waves. And what they're going to do is be in the whole nonprofit loop and think of themselves. Everyone needs to think of themselves as being good. You know, very even you know, Hitler, I mean, these guys, they created the laws, right? They didn't break any laws.
Right.
You know, they were so good. They were ridding the world of, you know, those pesky Jews. So here's, you know, here's another thing is that, you know, this whole thing is about feeling real good about yourself, thinking you're really great. And meanwhile, you're just walking lockstep into this, you know, this plan, that is basically designed to keep you powerless your entire life.
It's real funny. I was sitting on a board once. I wish you'd been there. And we had two wonderful young people who just couldn't fathom what was really going on. We were working on something called financial permaculture, and we were focused on developing the local community. And all of a sudden, you know, the government shows up trying to throw lots of money at one of the young people. And we were at the board meeting, and I remember turning to her and I saying, you know, you have to understand that sometimes us right-wing wackos are right.
Yeah,
it was a great moment. They can't fathom it's really this bad.
Well, you know what's really I find is interesting. You mentioned the right wing thing, and of course, you know, I don't necessarily identify as a Democrat at this point. I don't identify with any party, but I was a Democrat for 30 years, and
you probably thought of yourself as a very progressive person,
totally,
and are surprised to find yourself.
Yeah, all that stuff. You know, I mean, I'm all that stuff, right? I've got cred, you know what I mean? And
yeah, you're pretty and from California, right?
Yeah,
you know, and all of a sudden you're being described as a right-wing wacko.
Right. And I'm like, hey, wait a second, you guys. I'm part of your team. What are you doing to me? And, you know, and I have to say, I don't care. And that's why they really hate me is because I don't care. But most people do care, and they don't want to be rejected, and they don't want to be – it's very difficult and extremely painful to be completely rejected by those that you thought were your tribe, you know. And you
right. Well,
really,
some people – you know, most people just want to enjoy their lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you
that's
can't
true.
Fault them for that. That's a healthy
yes,
– so I have
– actually, yeah.
Well, here's where I fault people, where when they actively make money – and curry favor by doing things that harm other people. You know, the housing bubble, Rosa, did not happen just from Washington and Wall Street. It took every community in the country being greedy, you know, to engineer it. So, well, there are two things I want to make sure we take some time to talk about. One is the new agenda. So the UN met in September. We were entertained by an endless parade of the Pope and world leaders, and they published at that time for the 70th anniversary what they describe as the, you know, an add-on. So this is, I don't know if this is just a rebranding or a refresh or a touch-up or what, but what got added, if anything, to Agenda 21, or are they just making it more fluffy?
Well, basically, okay, so Agenda 21 is, it's soft law. It's not, you know, it's not a treaty. And really, it doesn't just focus on the environment. In fact, the real operative thing in Agenda 21 is about information and data sharing. That's the whole key of it. It doesn't matter what the, you know, it's a container that they pour anything into, but those words are the vital part of it, and that is the whole thing is designed to inventory and control everything on the planet. So Agenda 2030 is basically the Sustainable Development Goals and Millennial Development Goals that they've just tweaked to make it look like they're more focused on the human being aspect of it rather than the environmental aspect. So now they're really supposedly interested in alleviating poverty and making sure that girls don't get sold into sexual slavery and that women have businesses and all of that. But really the whole story is that they're working on developing markets in the so-called third world, and in vilifying and destroying any kind of independence and ability to create, as you said, create personal equity in the more developed nations. And also, you know, pushing the idea that the church, you know, I mean, if you wondered what the Pope is doing in there, as I said, I think 178 nations agreed to Agenda 21, plus the 179th is the Vatican and the Holy See. And the churches, you're going to see, are very involved in this. And that's one thing, you know, people kind of probably wonder what they can do. There's a lot you can do. And a lot of people are doing it. You don't find it in the mainstream media, so you won't know. But millions of people around the world, and it's a worldwide plan that's the same everywhere, are fighting it. One thing is that you're going to see it in your Episcopal church. You'll see it in your Catholic church. You see it in all the churches, all the, you know, synagogues, all the in the Muslim whatevers. This is the deal, is that it's a full-on assault on anyone who would dissent. So they're going to get you no matter where you hang out, whether you're in a school, whether you're at a business, whether you're accepting media, or whether you're, you know, going to church or wherever you go. You're going to get this community power against you, peer pressure that is so powerful.
Well, actually, you know, it's funny because I've come up against this and seen how it works. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so, for example, some of the scripting will flow through the women's Bible class, and there's certain information that's handed down or issues that are lobbied, you know, at that level. It's very, very thoroughly networked. But what's interesting is most of the people are naive, and it's only one or two who have been, you know, who really know what's up and are sort of anointed to go in there and push. And so it's not everybody, but it's very clever how it gets crafted.
Yeah, and I really do go into that in my book. And, you know, I mean, I think that I thought that was pretty important to really focus in on, is how you get manipulated. And where you get manipulated and exactly what technique they use and how you can fight that technique. And you will see it, you know, when you're volunteering.
Right.
You know, hey, you're a good person. Of course you're going to volunteer at your church. You've got to check this stuff out. Who are you? What nonprofit are you giving your time and money to? And, you know, this is the thing, is that they use volunteering. They use, you know, the gap year for pre-college students. They use any kind of way that they can in your so-called community to propagandize you to the point where you will go.
So what does the new thing they published in September add to 21?
Mm-hmm. Well, it
what,
doesn't
what's
really,
the specific?
It doesn't actually really add anything. It's just looking at it from a different angle. Basically, what it does is it identifies 17 millennial development goals, which are supposedly agreed to by all the nations. But I'll tell you, we have this on our website, the Post Sustainability Institute website. If you go on there and you check any nation, any country, it'll take you directly to the UN site, where they tell you what inroads by 1997, what inroads Agenda 21 had made into every country. I mean, you're going to see Iran, Iraq. You're going to see Saudi Arabia. I mean, you know, so it doesn't matter, okay? This whole thing is the biggest public relations scam in the history of the world. It's about getting people to buy in voluntarily and giving them the feeling that they're so good. So now they're just using this face of alleviating world poverty. That's all. And making
right.
all these nations, you know, they're just going to say how cool they are that they're
So let me ask you about the Paris conference in December on mm-hmm. climate change.
Right.
Because it looks to me like they are really aggressively trying to get buy-in before December. You know, the last one blew up. They didn't get their way. They're trying to aggressively get buy-in for a global cap and trade system, which, of course, is just going to make this much, much worse.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, here's the deal with, you know, I really don't think they're going to get the United States to agree to it, but it's possible.
Oh, Rosa, that does my heart good to hear you say
you know,
that.
I've been wrong before. So, but, you know, what I see, obviously, what they're using with cap and trade, they're using this climate action model as their new value system. So it's like...
Right.
How does as human beings do you add or subtract from the value of the world? You know, I mean, that's what you're looking at, the new value system based on tracking, assessing, and rating human beings. So the whole thing, you know, this carbon trading and cap and trade and all this is a mask. It's a mask for really actually seeing whether you have value or not, and are you using too many resources and that.
Well, but here's the problem.
Down.
You know, there are about 1 million problems with this whole rotten idea, but one of the big ones is that the process for determining, you know, how much a given thing costs in terms of carbon is totally and completely corrupt. And I'm always telling people,
totally.
If you think derivatives is a problem, wait till you get a load of cap and trade. And because,
I
you know,
know.
I've
and
had
that,
people. Yeah.
That this is, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm just so, obviously you can see I'm excited about this. And the reason is because, man, these people are smart. I mean, they really have it together, don't they?
Yeah, because this is how you double up on derivatives. You're going to have a financial scheme and financial fraud that will be galactic compared to anything we've seen.
And not only that, but they are going to have, you know, it's like you remember the Chicago cap and trade thing with Maurice Strong and Gore, right? You know, where they made a bunch of money and then the whole thing blew up, and of course they walked away with their $600 million. Well, the thing about the cap and trade, it's going to be local, man. I'm telling you, I've got stuff on my site that's fascinating. It's wonderful. You should check it out. They're going to do cap and trade with water and cap and trade do it yourself, cap and trade locally, where you actually, if you want to water your lawn and you don't have enough water credits, you're going to have to buy more water credits on the cap and trade website, where whoever's running it is making money, and this is your local kingdom. These are neo-feudalist plants. You know, they're going to enrich the little local dude who's going to, you know.
Well, here's the interesting thing. If you used equity, you know, you could use local equity markets and markets to optimize all of this in a way that would create much, you know, everybody would get wealthier.
You've got to get out of that paradigm. I love what you think, but you're so wrong, because they don't care about that. This is all about destroying.
But what I'm saying is, here's what I'm saying. As an economic matter, if you're looking to optimize your environmental situation, this is a way of doing it which destroys massive wealth. What I'm saying is, there's no economic problem. We can solve and address every environmental problem on this planet in a way that produces massive wealth. Mm-hmm. But the reason we're not doing that is for whatever reason that they're doing it this way. So all I'm saying is there is no economic reason why we need to do something this nuts or this negative. There are plenty of options.
Yes.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
And, you know, but if you dare to say that, you know, I mean, it's the emperor has no clothes time, right? And then you're
Oh, but Rosa, I think everyone knows now. I think everybody knows these folks are full of yaya. You know, a lot of people go along because they just want the money. But I think the number
of
people.
Your everyday person does not know and really buys into this. And that's what they do count on that. Because that's what the school system's about, and that's what the media is about.
Right.
You know. I mean,
right, but the anger over Common Core and Obamacare is tremendous, and the anger over the bailouts is tremendous. So I just see – now, here's what people know, and that is that these folks ultimately are very dangerous. So I think a lot of people are scared and, you know, don't know how to go about doing something about it that's effective. And, you know, I sympathize because I've watched a lot of people get killed or poisoned or whatever. So I think this is a process where you have to be very crafty because, you know, these people have a lot of, you know, all the way from the Delphi techniques that you describe to, you know, all sorts of candy and pet treats that they hand out to get us to go along. But ultimately, you know, if you're giving them too much trouble, you know, they're dangerous. So I think
we got to be brave.
Right. Well, one of the things I was going to suggest to you is one of my favorite Solari reports is one I did on entrainment technology, because I think a lot of this stuff is marketed with entrainment and subliminal programming. And that's certainly part of the problem with the younger people, because given the entrainment they're digesting with the media and smartphones, they can't fathom that it's really this bad.
That's right, and it's kind of like Newspeak with 1984, where they can't formulate the dissent. It doesn't even formulate. They don't have the ability. Yeah.
Well, it's really funny because any person, whether millennial or our generation, who I get a chance to really sit down and talk with, the reason I can persuade them is because of the mathematics and time and money. And if you look at Common Core, they're trying to raise people who can't master basic math. And there's a reason.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
Okay, so very quickly, what can we, if we could just do three things, what would you have us do? And then tell us how we find your site and your book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm gonna tell you right away how you can get my book, because I think that is really a helpful thing. And not because I want to sell books, but because it takes a long time to say there's like 20 pages in that book on what you can do. And the book.
Well, but one of the things we can do that will really help, because not everybody can go fight this, is we can put more money in your pocket. So we buy books, we give books, I'm telling people, put money in your pocket. Can they donate through your website?
You can actually get a lot off the website. And that is Democrats Against UN Agenda21.com.
Okay.
Or just put my name in your search engine. And it'll come up there, and a bunch of stuff. Well, what you really want to do, first of all, we need critical mass. So, awareness is the first step in the resistance, and there's no silver bullet. Nobody's gonna come and rescue you here. You've got to take this on yourself. And whoever you are, you've got a neighbor, you've got people that you know who trust you, who believe that you know what you're talking about generally. Those are the people you want to start with. But you need to educate yourself. Take a little time. Find out what what's going on locally. And this is one thing that's very powerful. Identify who takes power in your town and find out who they are. Look at climate action plan in your town. Look at the regional plan that's there for your town. Your town has one. Look at your and this stuff sounds boring, but I'm telling you, this is where the pedal meets the metal. This is where the dirt meets the road, okay?
Instead of wasting any time on the presidential election, go get these plans and read them.
Right. I mean, the presidential election, who cares? You know, what you're talking about is local, because this plan is a global plan implemented locally. So you right. want to look at your own town. You want to see your scenic byways, your redevelopment project, your bike boulevards, your traffic calming, your traffic-oriented development, your code enforcement, your smart meters, your well monitoring, your wetland misidentification. You're going to look at right. The ownership of all your, you know, everything in your town. Who is benefiting? And then you want to expose that. And we tell you, you know, make flyers, put them up on phone poles. This is, you are exposing, you know, you're exposing collaborators. Identify and expose collaborators and put out flyers. We have thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of flyers out across the United States. Do it. We've got mm-hmm. them on the website for you. Print them up, put them out, hand them out early in the morning on porch steps. Don't give them to people because they'll throw them out. Put them on people's porches right. in the morning. Get this information right. out. We're going to win it, actually, but we have to do it together. And you have to be courageous.
Right. You do have to be courageous. You do have to be courageous. Well, Rosa, I want to thank you very much for taking the time. And I'm serious. I think the way, you know, I hope everybody buys books and puts money in your pocket, because it's there's a great line in the movie Patton when Patton is going gangbusters and General Bradley is sitting on the side and he's got a newspaper with a big headline on Patton. He turns to his aide and he says, "Give Patton a headline and he's good for another 60 miles." So I'm a great believer that if we can put some fuel in your tank, mm-hmm. you know, that will help, because I think we really, I appreciate your leadership on this issue. I think this issue is just as important as you say it is. And the more people who can understand what's going on and support you in doing something about it, I think the better. And I know you're out there in California. Before we end, I just have to mention, I keep getting emails from a group in Marin who are going crazy because they're getting moved in on by Agenda 21. Mm-hmm. And so, uh-huh. you know, I know you're...
We sued what? Out here to stop... We have sued to stop a huge yes. project, the biggest. 9 counties, 101 cities, all regionalized in one Bay Ooh. Area. And we have sued. We're suing. We lost on Superior, and we're going up on appeal. And we are collecting funds for that lawsuit. It's a big lawsuit. And it's the worst regional plan in the entire United States.
Where can they donate? Where can listeners donate for that?
They should go to our website, postsustainabilityinstitute.org.
Okay.
And there's a link right there on the page. And this is not about me. I am just a regular person like everybody else who decided that it was so important that I was going to drop everything. I retired, and that's what I do. And this is important. All of us need to take this seriously and really take action. This is it. It's all about us.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. Okay, well, Rosa, you're great. We're in cahoots. And if there's anything I or the Salier Report can do to support you, you just let us know, okay?
Great. Thanks a lot, Catherine. I had a great time talking with you.
You have a wonderful day. Bye.
Okay.